The more you give a king, the more he wants. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spoons. Welcome to episode 256 of The White Book.
Roy Rogers!
Now that didn't really sound like Roy.
No, I was trying to do the beginning of a different podcast we listened to, but Roy sucks.
Ouch. I take criticism very harshly, Aaron. Yeah. I don't appreciate that. It makes me feel bad.
Well, you should have paid attention to the Wait What intro.
I do pay attention to the Wait What intro. I've been listening to Wait What for like 10 years.
Then why didn't you yell my name back?
Because, to be completely honest, I was waiting for Will to talk, because Will is the host of this podcast. I'm not, so I was being polite, Aaron.
You guys don't count as hosts? What would you call yourself?
Contributors?
I consider myself a host.
Yeah. Well, Will runs the show, you know, like, he sets the pace, he does the editing, he comes up, you know, he does a lot of the brainstorming for what the episode ideas are going to be. He's the consistent voice across every single White Book episode and 2C1C episode. So,
I mean, he owns it, but that doesn't mean we're not also hosts.
Yeah, I thought like, you guys were like hosts. Happen to be host, producer, and editor.
Yeah, exactly. But if you invite someone over to your house, but you rent your house, you're still the host.
I don't even... That metaphor is so mixed, Aaron. I don't even want to engage with that. So... It's not the most mixed metaphor you've ever used when arguing with me, but it's up there.
I mean, I'm sober. I would hope it's not the most.
For the record, I actually own a house, so.
Damn. And you're back from your honeymoon? You're really adulting these days pretty well, Will.
Adulting real hard, yeah.
You have one step left, and then it's the slow, steady decline to death.
Yeah, we're going to try and skip that.
Probably a wise decision. Enjoy married life for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what else I'm enjoying?
If you say Game of Thrones, I'm going to punch you because this game sucks.
I was going to say having new cards.
I'm also enjoying that, too. Unlike Aaron, unlike what you may have heard, cynicism has not entirely sucked my heart out.
At least not publicly.
I mean, it was kind of nice to take a couple weeks off, to not really think about the game at all or anything because nothing was changing or happening in the meantime. And then now I come back and pay attention again, and bam, new cards. Timing just doesn't get better than that.
It is. It's almost like a belated wedding gift from FFG to you.
I can think of a lot of Game of Thrones with better from FFG. Maybe one of these days I'll sit down and we can do a top 10 list of that for the show when we're really dry on content.
Top 10 things FFG should have given Will for his wedding. That's a good White Book filler art.
Yeah, I mean, number one, a game that works.
Yeah,
signed picture of Nate French is number two.
I was going to go with organized play, but
yeah, I think Will wins number two. Number three, always having the most cards in his deck at tiebreakers.
Yes,
forgetting the accidentally skipping the draw phase one round.
At this point, we might as well go ahead with the whole top 10. What's number four going to be? An agenda that lets you play four copies of cards in your deck.
Ooh.
Number five, 2.0 Recursionator.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. I want Rearminator so bad. Roy, I think that sends number six to you, man.
Better keywords.
Mm. Ooh, interesting. I would definitely take some more, but I'm actually pretty happy with the ones we've got right now. But I would love Deadly to return.
With better timing rules.
Yes. Let's see. Number seven. How about a Septon theme deck?
Ooh.
I want a high sparrow that like can't be bounced by first snow, but gets stronger for you having a bunch of nameless chuds in play.
So Robert Baratheon as the high sparrow.
Pretty much, yeah. It's Nedley, I say.
Number eight, an official renaming of the player types.
Number nine would be Melee as a world championship format.
Yes. Oh my goodness.
So it's like giving, it's like instead of the Cole being like, no, we were just kidding, and then giving back what you already had.
Yeah, and then you feel thankful for keeping what you want.
It's kind of like your friend who gives you the gift you gave them at their wedding.
Oh. Hey, speaking of which, I still have your wedding gift sitting at my house. I should really mail that to you.
Oh.
As Carlos grumbling in the background, yeah. getting that shit out of my house.
And item number 10 that FFG should have gotten me for my wedding present. Without his beard.
That's like the Cole again. The last gift is Cole.
Yeah.
All right, let's review a chapter pack.
Yeah, look at that. We've got Across the Seven Kingdoms available now. And listeners, we're going to be doing things a little different this chapter pack. We stumbled onto something inadvertently at the end of the last cycle that we think is going to be much better both for us and for you for the review episodes. I think we're still going to quickly read the cards and hit on them, but we're not going to slow down and individually read and then round robin, discuss, rate, and then on to the next card ad nauseum. We are just going to hit each house kind of as a whole picture and say, how does that house change with this chapter pack? Like I said, we'll probably still read the cards quickly so you've got the idea in front of you for that particular house, but we will be cross-referencing other things in the pack and mentioning, you know, neutrals and stuff as we go. So I think it'll give a better cohesive picture of what's going on and not bog down as much as the just round robin can do.
Dig it. What house are we starting with?
Let's just do it in alphabetical, right? Doesn't that sound like the way to do it?
Do we do it in release, like pack release order, like that it's listed in like card game BB?
We don't know how to find that, so no.
Yeah.
You mean clicking date added on card game BB?
That's crazy talk. Does that actually do it?
It does it by card number, yeah.
Well, that whole listing of things in order will.
Well, see, I knew there was a way to do it. Aaron and I just couldn't find it.
All right, I don't care. That's just how I have it open.
We now have them in order, so we might as well. Except we can't start with the first card, right?
Yeah, no. Exactly. What a mess. I've never seen FFG do this. Suddenly throw one single neutral in at the beginning.
Well, they did Night's Watch. Like, they broke their pattern with the first chapter back, right? Where Will, since he's the first character mentioned in the book, they put the Night's Watch card first in the first chapter pack.
Gotcha.
And then every other chapter pack, I think Night's Watch is towards the back, I think, of the chapter packs.
Yeah, you're right.
Or the middle or whatever it is.
That makes sense. So and, one, you know, it's been too long since I've read Clash of Kings. Does the prologue open with Crescent looking at Dragon's Tail?
You've got it exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk about the Dragon's Tail quickly.
Melee card.
We better read
it quickly.
Zero cost event. Action, omen. Choose an opponent. You and that player each draw two cards. So yes, it is a deal-making melee card. And otherwise, please don't put it in your decks. You're doing it.
Yeah, not right now. They may have some Shaga application on down the road if you just need to draw into some kind of combo, but deal-making in melee is much more favorable.
Yeah. Are we rating things, or are we just moving on?
No.
Yeah, I don't think we're doing the individual card ratings. More of a generic house rating when we're kind of talking about the impact for that house in this pack.
Okay.
So Dragon's Tale doesn't so much.
Right.
All right, so we move on to the Stark cards. Boys, do you want me to do both Stark cards?
Yeah, okay, just read both, and then we'll talk about Stark as a group.
Right, well, one of them's already been spoiled, so I can go through it really quick, which is the new Rob, King Rob. So he's 7 cost, loyal, Stark character, the surprising icons of military power, 5 strength, renown, king and lord. During military challenges, Rob Stark gains +1 strength for each loyal character you control, and he comes with this action. While Rob Stark is participating in a military challenge, choose a participating non-king character. Stand that character and remove it from the challenge. Limit once per challenge. And then the second card, which the art was spoiled, but I don't think the text was spoiled before the pack came out, is River Run, which is a 2-cost unique location, House Tully, Riverlands, and has the reaction, after power is gained or moved to a House Tully character, kneel River Run to have that character gain 1 power. I think River Run is I like this card, because it pushes Stark Rush, and I'm a big fan of Rush decks becoming a bigger thing. And Rob's, of course, big problem is that he's named Rob Stark, but I actually think there's a hyper Stark murder deck out there. So I would say Stark, for the first chapter pack, gets some interesting cards, supporting one theme that already really exists, and then maybe beginning a new one. So I think it's a very solid first couple of cards.
Sorry, go ahead, Will.
Okay. I was just going to say, I think it's actually a relative impact pack for Stark. Rob, I think, is good, but at the moment, I think I still want core Rob, especially since they're both loyal. Maybe as more king interactions come out when we're deeper into the cycle, I change that opinion. But right now, like, he looks interesting, but not what I'm going to. River Run, I think even in the Stark Rush deck, I'm probably only playing one of it. And so, while it's interesting to me and I like it, like overall, I don't feel like this is changing Stark's like deck building patterns or pushing a new build or anything that just really enthuses me.
Okay. River Run goes entirely in a Tully deck, but we don't quite have enough cards for the... Okay. We don't quite have enough cards for the full Tully deck. Rob goes in 2 decks that I can think of very specifically. In a Stark Lion, I think, where you'd want to run kill events because you have Tyrion and stuff, he makes it really, really easy to get off a Put to the Sword, especially if you ran a couple Winter Plots in Winterfell. That Put to the Sword with Rob is almost unstoppable because his strength's going to get mighty high pretty quickly. And, you know, he can toss out a defender. The other spot where I think he's really good is a Stark Crossing, because you can just military with him challenge 1, and unless they badly overcommit, it seems very likely that you're going to win that military, and they're going to have to overcommit.
Yeah, I mean, Rob can win the first challenge. Rob can put the sword by himself on that first challenge, because he goes to 6 strength because he counts himself, and then he goes down to 5 if you can kick their only defender out. So yeah,
right, and they have to defend with more than 1 person.
Yeah,
which is really impressive. Like, he might be enough to really give that Stark Crossing a pretty big boost up, at least, you know, for another month until we get Kings of Winter and Winterfell stops being quite so good.
Yeah, I think, though, there might be a Stark Kings of Winter that tries to offensively Winterfell, with this Rob and Kings of Winter agenda.
It's hard to take the tempo hit of even drawing a 4-cost location when your opponent might be running Kings of Winter and then it's basically a dead plot.
That's true.
A red card. So I think, I don't think Winterfell goes away, but I think it goes from like a 3 of mulligan for it to a 2 of like, let's build the whole strategy around it.
Yeah. If you draw it, you're happy. It's fine. If you don't, you move on.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably more balanced in fairness.
Yeah. It's a healthier environment. So I'm more bullish, I guess, on these Stark cards than I guess the 2 of you are.
I like them. I just don't think they change anything.
Yeah, I think I'm with Aaron on. So, I mean, if you were giving the house as a whole out of this pack, then what would you look at? I mean, I still think these are good cards. I think the house as a whole is probably getting, I don't know, at this point, somewhere in the B range out of this pack, but just not like different, exciting, just kind of steady cards.
Yeah, I think that's a C+ to me. Like, you did just what you were supposed to, barely. They don't go in most decks. C+.
I will grade, like, actual modern-day teacher's grade, which is that this is a B pack, even if it's exactly the way in which Aaron described it.
Glad we're on the same page there, Roy.
All right. Will gets Tyrell.
Hey, all right. I'm excited about Tyrell, less so about these cards, but let's read him first. We have Sir Colin of Greenpools. He's a unique 2-drop. He is loyal. He has military and power icons and 1 strength. He is a knight, and during power challenges, Sir Colin of Greenpools gets +3 strength. And then we get Bitterbridge Encampment. This one is a unique location, also loyal. 3 cost, the reach trait, and reaction. After a summer plot card is revealed, kneel Bitterbridge Encampment. Then each player may put a character into play from his or her hand. As much as I love Tyrell from the thematic sense, some of my favorite characters in the books, events, and so on, these cards continue to be more of what Tyrell does not need. We get a card here that wants to really leverage bigger, beefy characters. Tyrell as a whole, as a house theme, wants to leverage strength matters and whatnot. And then we get, well, about the dinkiest of dinky uniques in the game to go with it. And, you know, they just continue it to me. This just continues the trend of Tyrell getting a bunch of these enabler cards, but not the end game that those want to enable you to. So I'm pretty unenthused.
I don't think I give a shit about either of these cards. Bitterbridge Encampment's really Shaga and like might be good with a banner or if Tyrell gets a really good boost one day. But by then, it'll probably be ready to rotate out. And Colin is good in the knight deck that really doesn't work anymore. If that knight deck ever works again, though, he sure is a one of. I'm going to just give it a C- and never think about these two cards again.
I think Bitterbridge, I mean, obviously we all agree about the 2-cost guy. Like, he's fine. Like,
he's a 1X.
Yeah, forever in one knight's deck, or if you want a low-cost, solid Tyrell card, whatever, he's fine. But Bitterbridge Encampment is, I think, a card that either is terrible or broken. So if someone can figure out a way to break that card, then it will probably be one of the first restricted cards.
Corey Faraday already figured out how to break it. It's called House of Dream.
Yes, House of Dream. Or, you know, like a Tyrell Intrigue deck that can empty your opponent's hand. Because remember, it happens before the draw phase, right? So you have cards, the characters you can put in for free, but and they have no cards in hand, right? Like something like that. But until it's broken, it's just terrible. Yep. I would say Tyrell gets a D+.
I mean, and really, if you're talking about that sort of thing, like you're coming up with several steps at that point in order to use Bitterbridge Encampment to get somewhere in the realm of like, probably 3 to 5 gold income boost minus the resources you've spent trying to put them in a position where you benefit from that and they don't. Plus you've dictated the plot deck in the summer. Like at that point, I think I would rather just play the Arbor, you know, and make do with the steady +3.
But you could dupe this on setup.
You could.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that could make this card more interesting, right, is if it had the limited keyword, right, because it is economy.
Yeah, because so, right now it could sure be hit by...
Yeah.
Sure can.
Right. So, I don't know, Tyrell in this pack, yeah, I mean, if I'm giving it a group rating out of this, I honestly think I give it like a... It's probably certain to change as the pool grows and we can see more about how Bitterbridge Encampment's going to play out, but...
Poorly.
Yeah, it's not looking great to me.
At least it's not a forced reaction.
Yeah,
could you imagine?
It would be terrible. Like, it would just be... There would be no potential in the card. Like, why would you pay 3 gold to be forced anytime you reveal a summer plot to put... To, you know, what just happens if, you know, it's like the 3rd plot of the game and just for some reason you have no characters in your hand? Like, through no design of the deck, just that's how you drew the cards.
Yeah. And you would have to run 59 characters in this.
Yeah, it'd be terrible.
I mean, that deck was kind of fun in first edition with Gates of Winterfell, but this is far worse than Gates of Winterfell.
Indeed.
All right, Aaron. Night's Watch.
Night's Watch. The first character is Ahri. She is a 4-cost military intrigue, 3-strength loyal character. I mean, he, she is. Recruit keyword, ambush 4. If you control Arya Stark, sacrifice Arya, which is hence the he, she. Arya is Arya pretending to be a little boy.
Spoilers.
Shut up. It's not even
spoilers
a spoiler.
For book
like,
two.
Like, she announces she's doing it the second it happens. Like, it's not even a secret in the book. Action. Return Ahri to your hand to draw one card. Yeah, that card's fucking amazing. But then there's the White Tree. The White Tree is a 3-cost loyal location. It is contested, whatever that is, and the North. Reaction. After an opponent collects income, kneel the White Tree to move one gold from that player's gold pool to your own. Yeah, Night's Watch got the single best both defense and mini curve they've gotten since Will? I guess probably Arya's even better than both ever. Yeah. She's probably the single best
sacrifice. Well, she's Arya.
She's probably the single best Night's Watch card so far. No, she's probably the best Night's Watch card in the game, period. And the White Tree opens up an entirely new style of play. Because while meager contribution is nice, it's a one-off, right? You can't really rely on that. This plus meager, plus, say, I don't know, Greyjoy kneeling your reducers. Now choke is a... and the upcoming winter, choke is a real theme out of Night's Watch, which is brand new. And Ahri is the best Night's Watch character because, I mean, 4/3, the right icons can be reduced by fealty and can jump back to your hand to avoid all sorts of nastiness to draw a card. Like, even on a first no turn, and even if you don't have anything else, if you can go first, she can get off a challenge and then bounce back to hand to relative safety and even draw you a card to help protect her from intrigue.
Yeah, yeah. I just agree. Like, I mean, I think Night's Watch is the first clear A faction in the pack. I think you mean only, but okay. Only, we'll get there. We're going. I'm pretending like I haven't spoiled myself by reading. But I think these are the kind of cards that Night's Watch players were asking for, right? Flexible cards that push multiple themes that have the right icon. And I like that.
The exact opposite of what Terrell got.
Yeah, the exact opposite. Who knows? You know, we are only on the first chapter pack, so you never know. But within the context of this pack, these cards are above curve, really solid. There's nothing to complain about it with any of these cards. I mean, I guess maybe that Ahri is not a tri-con. I don't know what you can complain about with these cards.
Yeah, I love it. I'm not sure I have a whole lot more to say past that. I mean, I think people already acknowledged the Messenger Ravens as some of the best draw in the game. And I think there's a solid argument to be made that maybe Ahri is better than that. So great and flexible. Now you're bouncing and returning her to hand to gain some additional card advantage versus something like the Hound. I mean, yeah, he's got more strength, but his other abilities potentially losing you some cards. Like, this is totally optional.
I just had a thought.
Yeah.
Night's Watch Martell, her in, like in a Valor meta, you can get enough resets. Her, Ariane and Ahri, with like Varys and Valor, and just being like, my guys are safe. You're so dead.
The fact that she just dodges any sort of reset and a ton of removal is so, and it's just a straight up action. It's not even like dominance phase or something like that. At any point in time, you feel
the fact that you can get 2 uses out of her if you have the gold, right? You can do a military challenge with her, pop her back to hand, draw a card, and then ambush her in, is pretty nuts.
Or actually, even say, I don't know, it's late game, you flip a trading with the Pentoshi or something, you could potentially like marshal and bounce her, you know, back to hand multiple times in the marshalling phase if you just have gold to burn and need some cards.
Very true. Those fun double trading turns.
Yeah. I mean, it's unlikely, but it's an option, and I can see, you know, a couple games at some point where that happens and I've just somehow drawn all the resources and haven't hit a character or something, and I just need to dig sometimes.
There's games late game where, like, if you don't see a milk, you lose, right? Like, so you just play bounce, yeah. And you go, fuck, where's that milk? Maybe you hit it, because everyone's hit something weird at the top deck moment they need it.
Yeah, she enables combo decks that just want to cycle. I mean, she's just a very, like card draw on a card that is also useful for other reasons when you don't need the cards, unlike the Ravens, who are only really useful for Claim Soak or, I guess, Dominance. that they're just giving you two strength at most, right? With the wall out, Ahri is just really, really good. But we are also underselling White Tree, which is also excellent. Like, people who think that the three gold is too much of a drawback have to remember how much it can really screw up your opponent's plan to just take that one gold from them. That, say, they can, yeah, they can Marshal Tywin this turn, but now they can't put you, or they can't tiered you. And that one turn can buy you huge amounts of long-term tempo that they can't get their removal off, giving you time to set up defense, to set up a response, and those kind of things.
Yeah. I mean, the White Tree is the kind of card that I'm, you know, when we're talking about a faction as a whole, that makes me excited in this pack, because it's going to make people look at a whole deck type again. And, you know, the folks that had drifted off or written off Choke are going to suddenly be looking at it again and building and tweaking and trying that. Okay. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm really looking for out of a pack.
I'm also really happy because in one of my first indeterminate number of thoughts columns, I predicted that Night's Watch would get a bunch of shit chapter pack 2. And I don't even remember any more, and I'd given up on the deck to the point where I just assumed that FFG would let them be terrible forever, but I might actually be right. So also,
yeah, well, I mean, we can't go a whole episode that Aaron appears on without mentioning, but I think this pack hopefully signals good things to people like Joe from Cincinnati, who have stuck by Night's Watch through the darker times, and hopefully Ahri and White Tree signal that Night's Watch as a faction is getting some love in this cycle.
I have no idea who Joe is, and I've never heard of Cincinnati. Can we just give it an A and move on?
Yeah. I'm on board with an A.
So does that bring us then to Bera?
Yes, sir.
Yes. We were just talking about some overwhelming cards, so let's talk about some underwhelming ones. Excuse me. Both of these were already spoiled by our British friends. So, again, we can go through them pretty quick. White Raven character. It's a one strength power icon. Raven, surprising the world, has a force reaction. After you lose a power challenge, sacrifice White Raven. Reaction, after you win dominance, if there's a summer or winter plot revealed, gain one power for your faction.
It's a trap.
Yes. Ruby of R'hllor, a unique three cost attachment. It's an item and has the R'hllor trait, so Melisandre can trigger off it, being marshaled. Reaction, after you win an intrigue challenge in which attached characters attacking, name a card. The losing opponent reveals his or her hand and discards each card with that name. I would say both of these cards are pretty underwhelming.
You're using the wrong word.
What?
You keep saying underwhelming when you mean bad. They don't mean the same thing.
I don't think they're actively bad.
Okay. No. Look at them closely again. They're bad.
Okay, let me put it this way. I can at least see where FFG is going with these as compared to something like Bitterbridge. I look at Ruby and I go, you know what? There are decks where I just want another R'hllor card. I'm okay with that. If I nab an extra, you know, discard out of an hand somewhere,
great.
White Raven, also, I can look at that, and I can kind of see, you know, it's not super great in Joust, but I'm kind of seeing some of this.
Melee.
No. I can kind of see this dominance thing kind of coming together. It doesn't look like they have all the pieces there yet. But I can see something's kind of coming together where they're putting this Baratheon deck together that's going to be a similar sort of defensive thing to the wall decks out of Night's Watch, where they're just going to sit back, make sure that they have power on lockdown, and then everything that's left over wins the dominance, and they just, you know, rock it to board position and power that way. It's still not really feeling there, but I see what's going on.
So in a pure dominance deck, 100% dominance, I really want to win dom. That's the whole goal of the deck. I'm still not running away right now. In a pure R'hllor deck, as best we can make it now, and I would guess for the foreseeable future, I'm still not running Ruby of R'hllor. That makes these cards failures. They're trying to do something. But while they're trying to do something, they also literally don't go on the decks they're trying to do something for. Yeah, that's F.
I think probably White Raven is much closer to it. I think Ruby of R'hllor, I think
it's really good on that one turn you have seen in flames and dead otherwise.
Yeah. You know, it shows one of the reasons why FFG's floor rule says we can't take notes. If it's going to push these sort of cards that reward people with excellent memory, then I can see why they told us that we can't take notes. Secondly, I think it says that Bera is going to be getting more intrigue support in this cycle, right? Because why print a card that rewards you for winning the intrigue challenge when probably the only challenge that Barra is consistently bad at right now is the intrigue challenge. They have, you know, Mel, who is really dangerous using intrigue challenge because there's a lot of removal for characters to participate in challenges. You have Solis, and you have the Fiery Followers as their intrigue icons. So this says to me, maybe there will be more intrigue support for Barra going forward. Still don't think it's a great card. I think it's at most a B+. But at least it tells me, hey, Nate and Danny might be pushing something new into Barra.
Nah. Man. You give them way too much credit.
I'm nowhere near as down as Aaron on these, especially when I'm looking at how I rated something like the Tyrell cards again. Like, at least these are interesting. These are hooking into kind of some themes that they've got going on. And
the Tyrell cards are better.
And, I mean, yeah, I'll play one copy of Colin, but...
Oh, White Raven, one... doesn't make any sense to me, right? Because what else in that they maybe summer and winter decks are going to be big Barra themes. Who knows? Again, the first chapter pack. But what that they've signaled, right? Because they've signaled already that based on things that came out in the first cycle and things that came out in the box, that Stark and Greyjoy are going to be winter, and at least Tyrell is going to be summer. What have they signaled that seasons is going to be something that gets support in Baratheon? And why is even White Raven like thematically Baratheon?
I mean, he can get support and then be discarded anyway. Like, the first reaction doesn't not happen because it's summer or winter.
You would get
a power if he ever survived to dominance, which he won't.
Right, but also, okay, again, let's say, though, you what do you get as a Barra player for running Kings of Winter, Kings of Summer right now, besides what's printed on those cards?
Kings of Winter has a little bit of a hand choke, and Barra has a little bit of a hand choke.
Okay, that's it. But there's there's no cards in Barra right now that besides this that right. support that theme.
And there's no cards that support any summer or winter besides this pack. It just came out.
Yeah. No, there is. There's Fish Whiskers. There's Winterfell.
From the Stark box specifically, which one would have to assume was made after these plots.
Well, I'm afraid we might wind up going round here on Baratheon. I think we can at the very least agree that. You know, one card is going with some clearly established themes, even if it's not the best card of those themes, and the other one needs more support to really be in it. So, like, what do I give the pack for Baratheon? The rest of the cards in the pack don't really seem to hurt or hamper them in a huge way, so I'm just going off of these. I'm probably giving their entry here like a C-. Maybe as low as a D. That's not a big change.
I failed him already. Roy?
I just give him a D. Because I think Ruby of Valor means we're getting some intrigue cards. But that's it. Well, you get your faction.
Hey, all right. On to Lannister. Man, I got Tyrell and Lannister. I love it. So first up, we have Janice Slint. He's going to be a 5-cost loyal unique character, military and intrigue icons, 2 strength, mercenary trait, the intimidate keyword, and the action, pay 1 gold to give Janice Slint +2 strength until the end of the phase. And then they also get an event for 0 that is not loyal called Levies of the Rock. And it's a reaction. After a player initiates a challenge against you, move up to X gold from that player's gold pool to your own. X is the number of attacking characters. You know, these are interesting cards for them. I like that it's another kind of unique way to leverage income generation in Lannister there on Janice Slint. Levies, I think, is probably still not going to see a bunch of play, but at least is kind of an interesting choke card. In a broader sense of what happens to Lannister in this pack, there's a card I'm staring at that we'll get to in a little bit, Greyjoy, the captain's daughter, that I think actually Lannister takes a little bit of a hit in this pack when suddenly, you know, some of their non-loyal characters that are so prevalent in the decks, not only the in-house stuff like Tyrion and the Mountain,
stop talking about other houses.
Yeah, stuff like Miri and whatnot suddenly, you know, could be a bad tempo for them. So overall, Janos is an okay card. Levies isn't great, but I think some other stuff kind of knocks them down in this pack.
Yeah, I think Janos is really good. I don't know if he's a 3-of, but he's certainly a 1-of in almost every Lani deck, as long as you can find space. Like, sometimes you have that extra gold from Tyrion, or just because you're Lannister, and you, why not just stick a couple extra strength on Janos, win a challenge unexpectedly, it plays hell with opponents attacking you, and then if you're going first, like with guys like Gregor and Jaime and Janos, you don't even need to use the strength boost, you're going to be able to kneel something big. So that all seems really good. Levies of the Rock is a binder card, just binder, and never think that it exists again.
Yeah, I mean, Levies, the most interesting thing about Levies is that it's non-loyal. Yeah. So that means there could maybe be some Shaga card that is, you know, Shaga deck rather, that is built around that. But yeah, it's binder mostly. But I mean, Janos just is, he's just a git. Thank God he's loyal. That's the number one thing, right?
He shouldn't be from a Nedley
perspective. Right. From a Nedley perspective, right. I agree. You should not be loyal. But from a mechanical perspective, thank fucking God. Like, because Banner of the Lion did not need another solid to sometimes excellent character at the good five-cost slot. Like, it just didn't need that. But yeah, Janos is great. He can kneel, you know, get a bigger kneel off than Robert if you have the gold, right? Because it's the +2 strength. There's no limit to it. Janos is a minimum 1-of in Lannister decks until he cycles out. And who knows, there may be decks that can really abuse him, you know, like Banner of the Dragon that can stand him and use him in multiple challenges. Because it's until end of challenge or until end of phase? It is to
end of phase.
End of phase. So, yeah.
It goes over that Targ plan.
It makes its Targ plan stronger, right?
No. Palazzo was just like, I'm just going to eat him. You're like, nah, 1 gold.
Yeah. And well, no, I meant like you're running Lannister Banner of the Dragon, right? So you use him in one challenge, pump him up, kneel somebody, stand him with Illyrio, kneel somebody.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess you can do that. Well, I'm more like kneel somebody, get a Miri through and make it dead. But yeah, that works too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many different things you could do, right? I mean, he's just he's a Lannister good stuff card. So I actually would say just on the strength of Janos, this is like an A- for Lannister. This really? Pack.
Wow.
But I think Janos is a ridiculously good card. Not a like game breaking card, but just
yeah, I'm fine.
What Lannister wants to do even stronger.
I'm fine with a B. Oh, hey, one more thought. Lannister is really annoyed by all the cancel and challenge denial stuff in Stark, and Intimidate's a keyword, so it ignores all of that.
Yep. Tell your opponent's fast Eddie to sit down.
Or Cat, really.
Yeah, Cat. Yeah, I mean, being able to go first military challenge, kneel Cat, do the intrigue challenge, or the power challenge, and heal their...
Whatever, yeah. Or even Arya, be like, oh, who had ice? What? No.
Yeah. He's a really fucking good card.
Yeah, he's very solid. I think overall, Lannister in this pack, with Levies being pretty non-existent and some other stuff we see, I think their overall rating from him is probably like a B-.
Yes. Okay, Greyjoy. Captain's Daughter is a non-loyal 4/2 with a power icon. Ally. Reaction. After non-loyal character enters play, kneel your faction card and sacrifice the Captain's Daughter to place that character on top of its owner's deck. And then there is Pike, a loyal 2-cost location, Iron Islands. Kneel Pike to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gains stealth. Let's start with Pike. Pike is ridiculous. Pike is just a completely amazing card. We've seen how popular and powerful Sirio is. Pike is probably just better. Like, it's just incredibly, incredibly strong. Like giving Miri stealth on demand, because it does not say Greyjoy character.
Yeah, why does it say Greyjoy character?
I don't know. Why is it only 2-cost when everyone, like, why does Greyjoy get good locations that are 1 and 2-cost? Well, everyone else's good locations are 3. Yeah, I guess. But, like, everyone else's good locations are 3-cost. There's, like, 2 other good locations in the game that are under 3-cost.
One of them is in Greyjoy.
Right, outside of Greyjoy. Right, like, yeah. you have Gaston, Chamber, and,
The Stark draw.
And the Stark draw. And like every other good location is 3 or above. And then Greyjoy is like, we've got Pike. We've got the scouting vessel. We've got, is that what it's called in 2.0? No, right?
It's Rady Longship.
Sure. sure, we've got Scouting Vessel, we've got a Seastone Chair, we've got like Iron Mines, and like it's just like everyone else is like, well, I have to pay three, and it's just ridiculous that Greyjoy keeps giving these for one. Mind you, if they were a good house, I'd mind more. But even so, like, why are locations, an entire card type, playable out of one house? Seems silly. Pike is excellent. I do think Havden's Daughter is a trap card. I think the tempo hit of marshalling a 4/2 is bigger than people expect. I think warding Captain's Daughter is the single funniest thing in the game you could do, probably. And I think that generally, like, unless you've got a ridiculous board, this is going to be something you're going to want to claim before you can actually end up getting use out of it. Like, unless you're using it immediately. And even so, in some matchups, like against Stark, you're mostly hitting crap besides Fast Eddie. Like, there's a lot of
Fast Eddie, though.
Sure, but just don't play him that round.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to kill her. She's not that good. It's just, she's an okay card. I just really honestly feel like Captain's Daughter is a trap.
She's a Lanny Kraken card, like, I think. I think Lannister could definitely, a Lannister removal deck might like her.
I wouldn't run her in that deck. Like, Lannister just has better cards, man. Like I know what 12 Greyjoy cards I want, and I'm not taking any of them out for this tempo hit.
Well, depends at one point, like, the tempo hit is. It depends, as you said, on if you can afford to sit on. Greyjoy's got several saves and options available on that front. So if you can't afford to sit on her, you can easily make that tempo very much in your favor, I think. Because, you know, even that Fast Eddie sitting in your hand, in your opponent's hand, or that mountain or whatever, like a turn of them not playing that because you still have your Captain's Daughter sitting on the table is something that's in your favor. Is she great? No. Is Greyjoy a faction that I generally feel way more cash strapped than others? Yes. So that makes me a little wary of that 4/2. But, you know, maybe that means I'm looking at some kind of different, you know, Greyjoy build, which again is something that I'm kind of looking for in a chapter pack that's still this early in the game.
It also enters play, right? So right. She can also be useful for characters that get ambushed from Arion, you know, we're about to see another pretty powerful Martell card, or maybe possibly powerful. I'm sure there'll be some disagreement here about it. So I think she's more flexible than she looked at first look. So it would be interesting to see what becomes of Captain's Daughter. She'll probably be binder for a while until one person figures out what the clutch use for her is.
Maybe it's Tyrell deck.
Tyrell, definitely. Lannister.
Got the gold to spare.
Tyrell Kraken deck that's relying on the Arbor. Or things like Bitterbridge Encampment. You know,
there you go. You put her into play. Then when your opponent puts a non-loyal character into play from Bitterbridge, you sacrifice her to put their non-loyal back on top.
Perfect. and then they draw. Just marshal it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
But like, they. Yeah. Worst play. Or you just put her into play and then use her to return the good character that they marshal.
You have to reveal first.
Yeah. Not if you're going second.
Yeah. No, you still have to reveal first.
The ruling is
Bitter Ridge Encampment. I thought the ruling was just the person who has Bitter Ridge Encampment reveals first.
It's first player.
Oh, okay, whatever. All right, so I'm going to give this a B- because Pike is really fucking good.
I think I'm right there with Aaron. I didn't mention Pike enough, but it is phenomenal.
Because I think Pike is just a card you look at and you say, that's a good fucking.
I mean, because it is.
Yeah, you give Miri stealth. You give Phalon stealth. Anyway, yeah, I'm a more bullish B.
Yeah, actually, you know, I was about to change my mind and tick up to an actual B because Aaron had me sitting here thinking about locations and stuff, and I just want to throw out there that the additional location control we get in this pack, I think, is going to prove to be so such of a bad tempo hit that it's not going to see play, which of course makes Greyjoy's tasty locations like this even better. So
Targ?
So
yes,
Targ.
So I mean, that's kind of my impression of Targ. So Targaryen gets Viserys, which is already, he was one of the first cards spoiled. I think he was actually the first card spoiled. So Viserys Targaryen, one strength, single icon, power icon, two cost.
Okay. That was like
loyal. He's a king and a lord. While Viserys Targaryen is attacking, each king character must be declared as a defender if able. He has the interrupt. After the dominance phase ends, if no opponent controls a king character, Viserys Targaryen gains one power. And then they get, I don't even know how to pronounce this Dothraki word for the
Shirakia.
Shirakia. Zero cost, non-loyal event. It's an omen. Reaction. After you win a power challenge by 5 or more strength, kneel your faction card to choose and stand a participating character. Mm. Both of these are kind of conditional build-around cards. I think the event is a melee card. Mistress is sort of a... I don't know. There's so many ways to get rid of Viserys. He's like Greywind's best friend. He's like Greywind food. He's like just or Plaza food or for snow food.
It's funny you mentioned Greywind food since Rob is the only other card like that he's really going to be interacting with.
Uh-uh.
Yeah, or out sure of this we'll pack. Like, sorry, there's Rob.
I'm sure we'll get like a Stannis and a Renly and all the other kings in the world. But yeah. But it's to gain one power, right? If it went on your faction card, Viserys would be a lot stronger. The underwhelming, which is kind of Targaryen's problem. So yeah, I don't really have much to say about these cards. There's a good melee card and a card that he's interesting, but probably won't amount to much.
Man, I'm not even sure that Viserys is that interesting. He's distinctly underwhelming. To me, but I think you hit the nail on the head with Shirek being a solid melee card. Targaryen doesn't really have much else that it's playing that is competing at that kneel your house guard slot. It's probably not a big enough punch for Joust, but in melee, getting that extra use out of a character, particularly something with renown, your Drogo or something, or even restanding your Daenerys to make incoming attacks less enticing, I think is actually going to be pretty solid. But overall, there's not much else in this pack. It really feels, I'm noticing as I'm trying to look at the rest of the pack to see if there's stuff that impacts particular houses, that it doesn't look like there's a lot of interplay between these different cards, aside from, of course, using Pike to give Mary Mazdoor stealth. So I'm going to really love that for my Targaryen Kraken deck.
Nope, no, you're not.
Why not?
Love it for your Greyjoy Dragon deck.
Yeah, Greyjoy deck.
Oh, not for your Targaryen Kraken. Yeah, I'll have to swap the deck to do that, which I think may be worth giving a try, which looks like an extremely strong play. So as a whole here, I think I'm probably giving Targaryen... maybe a C+ out of this pack, and nearly all of that rating is based on Pike.
Wait, oh, okay.
Banner of the Dragon Banner of the Dragon becomes stronger, I guess, because Miri, yeah. Well, Greyjoy Kraken, or Greyjoy Dragon.
Shut up, Roy. All right, Viserys never gets play, or he shouldn't get play, because... there's another Viserys, and FFG hasn't given us enough attachment control. So actually having attachment control seems really important to the meta right now. So I'll probably keep running the Viserys that does something no one else can for as long as I can. And you guys totally missed the boat on Shirakia. What you're looking at is a Lannister card.
It is non-loyal.
It is, and it is not.
And it stands with any character.
And it stands anyone. You don't need a Targ for anything. Is for your... I used my Miri with a Hound, or it's for a Tywin on
defense. Or Tywin on offense. I mean, Tywin can...
Right. Yeah. But it's better for Tywin on defense than Tywin on offense. Like, it's okay for Tywin on offense, but it's really, really there for Tywin on defense. It's, in those two situations, extremely powerful. I still don't know if it's more than a one, maybe two up. But I think there's 11 good banner Targ cards from having built that deck about 15 times. And this could very easily a one of be the 12th as a show me that's going to screw with your opponent's head for the whole game. So the house still sucks and it's a D+, but like Shirakia has actual potential.
Yeah, I'm surprised that this card is non-loyal, the Shirakia.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this could also be solid in whatchamacallit. This could also be solid in Barra, but like I was thinking of Greyjoy,
mm-hmm.
because that second challenge, especially if you're trying to rush. Is really good, and we just discovered that this is definitely a build that exists, right?
And then
extra use out of that.
Yeah, Balon, like doing the power challenge first, and then standing him, and then doing the military challenge.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when he has stealth from Pike or his warship,
or both.
Yeah, double stealth.
Yeah, because they nightmares Balon, and just
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, if they nightmare's the location, someone else.
Yeah, it's just like, okay.
And so they nightmare's the location because they don't want to deal with the stealth. And you're like, no,
I see. And the power in the drone.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, not bad.
Yeah, that's a very, very solid point about the.
Yeah, so it's a banner of the dragon card, which right now the best thing about Targ is its banner cards, right? So.
Which is sad because it literally had 11 good banner cards. It's like Miri and Illyrio are so much better than we thought in other houses.
And one Viserion.
Yeah, I mean, I think this replaces one Viserion.
Make sure you have the right number of hatchlings, folks.
It's true.
All right, Martell?
Yeah, that's you.
It's not me.
No, it's me.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, this time we're off to Martell. We get Harmon Uller, a unique non-loyal character. He's 6 cost, military and power icons, 4 strength, has the House Uller and Lord traits. He also has renown, and each Sand Snake character in your hand gains Ambush X. X is 1 less than the card's printed cost. We also get the unique Tower of the Sun. This is a location. It's loyal, 2 cost, has the Dorn trait, and the reaction after an event is played, gain 1 gold, limit once per phase. Overall, I've got to say, I like these pretty well. I like getting...
What?
Hold on. I like getting another Lord for the Martell Crossing deck, because that's the only deck I'm probably bothering to play Dorin anyway. So here we've actually got someone else that gets affected by that. And he also has Renown, which accelerates that even more. The Sand Snake ability, whatever. We'll need to see more Sand Snakes, I think, to really make that click. Tower of the Sun, I think, is interesting. It's worth pointing out, of course, timing-wise, that the event, let's see, we discovered through the big timing arguments that something like Tower of the Sun will only resolve, or the reaction can only be triggered after the initial event is resolved, right? So you can't get a gold from your opponent's Tears of Lys in order to pay for the hand's judgment to cancel the Tears of Lys, right?
Correct.
Sacred.
Okay. So it's not as flexible, but I do like challenge phase gold creation, and the fact that it's any event, mine or my opponent's, intrigues me at least. So I'm going to hear what you guys say before I give them a rating.
Okay, Harmon's a good card. It's definitely good for crossing. It's really just like something I'd stick probably a one of in almost every Martell deck, because Bastard Daughter with this just gets exponentially better. Nymeria obviously is already amazing. If it's a Martell main, you're probably running Tain. I'm still not running Obara, but like I feel like that's enough for a one of. 6 for 4 renown. I am annoyed to see that Martell are still paying a strength penalty for Doran's existence. Like, he should absolutely be a 6 for 5. And please stop pretending Duran is a thing, FFG. He is, in fact, not a thing. Tower of the Sun is a fucking terrible card, and it's a complete joke that it's limit once per phase. Like, if it were not limit once per phase, this might be almost playable, but as is, like, it's literally an actively bad card that you should never ever play. Harmon's good. Like, Harmon's not loyal, but I don't know if I'm running him for his ability in any other house, so I feel like he's limited to a one of everywhere, so maybe of the house a C+.
I mean, Harmon already rewards Martell for doing the things it wants to do, which is right now play Sand Snake characters, right? Because two of its strongest characters, well, it's like centerpiece character, or one of its two centerpiece characters along with Ariane, are Sand Snakes, right? Nymeria. And then a really good character, Tain, is a Sand Snake, and he reduces the cost of those. And Martell is sometimes hit up for economy, so being able to reduce the cost of those characters and make them a surprise, plus he has renown. Like, I don't see why you would run at least one of, as Aaron says, but I could even see him as a two of, right? Because he's definitely a card you're not super sad to see because of that renown. He can help Martell close, and some Martell decks have trouble closing. Like, that's one of the reasons why Martell Wolf is very solid, is that the Stark gives you the potential to close a little bit quicker than Martell currently can. And Tower of the Sun, I agree with Aaron. Like, its big problem is that it's limit once per phase. If it was limit twice per phase and could pay for itself in the first turn, it would be a much stronger card. Like, it doesn't even need a strong strength boost. Like, it's just one of those cards that's not quite there. Like, the design wasn't pushed hard enough for it to be a really interesting card.
It also doesn't need to be loyal.
I mean, that's a design decision, right? Is economy, like, that doesn't bother me. Like, I don't mind making this economy, this boosts loyal, right? More of my problem is it can't pay for itself very quickly. It does make Martell's zero cost events a little stronger.
Or just non-loyalists that you might compare.
So,
more
claim.
Yeah,
much and more.
Gift of Arbor Red for...
No, that doesn't exist.
You don't know.
You cut that bullshit out or I will kick you off your own podcast.
Yeah, well,
hey, I'm the only host here.
Much and more.
Well, that's what you want of wine, right? Much and more of it. So it all makes
sense. I want wine. I don't want real drinks, whatever. And I think that's why Trell is so bad, because Nate drinks beer.
And bad beer, Mr. Coors.
Ooh, I like it.
So I was really hoping you guys were going to see some kind of connection to what's going on in the other factions that was going to impact this. But really all you did was convince me that Martell, despite this being non-loyal, is actually maybe even more insular than some of the things going on in other factions in this pack. So I feel confident in rating them overall out of this, probably a C-.
Yeah, it's just because Tower of the Sun's bad. Harmon's great, but Tower of the Sun's bad. So, but Harmon's not so great.
Yeah, he's, like you guys said, a very common one of, an occasional two of. But like, he's not pushing like a new build or forcing people to reevaluate something. Like, you're just finding a slot for him in some existing decks.
So sort of just neutrals that... I think there's, what, maybe two we want to talk about just in general and how they impact the factions?
Well, there's three more neutral cards.
Yeah, we might as well read all.
No, let's just do them one at a time. We'll fly. Let's fly, because the fuck are we saying about Pyromancers?
Well, it's a pretty controversial card, right? Like,
what's controversial about it?
Well, read the
Facebook. Let's read it. Like, whose Facebook turn is it to
Me. 5-2 intrigue. It's neutral, as we said. It's an ally. Dominance action. Kneel it and discard one power from your faction or to choose an unlimited location, discard it from play. It's a safety valve for a meta that doesn't exist right now. Like, if Night's Watch defense starts kicking ass, expect to see a couple of these in some decks. Until then, the fact that you have to discard it and chuck a power from your house.
You have to have power on your faction card, right?
Yeah, of course. You can't use it in a challenge and then just chuck a power for it. It's not a good card. Okay. Does anyone argue that this is anything more than a safety valve?
But I think we should definitely be pushing back, right? Because I was reading the initial, when this card was spoiled through the Italian distributor, like, people were freaking out. We should at least talk about, like, what the weaknesses of this card is and why it's an overreaction to think that this makes Night's Watch unplayable, for example.
Someone would have to play this.
Yes, you would have to cut good cards from your deck to put this card in your deck. Even in a meta that is overrun by Night's Watch defense, is this the best? I mean, to me, at least, put to the Torch is a better card than this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in general application. I would say if at some point a meta just hit a bonkers place where I felt confident, you know, 3 out of 4 rounds of the tournament or something, I'm going to be playing Night's Watch Wall, then yeah. But otherwise, yeah, the Pyromancers are just too big of a hit for not enough flexibility. And the art's pretty, at least. So, like, I'll give them that.
Like, if they got rid of the discard one power, if they got rid of non-limited, or if they gave it, like, 5 strength, any of those three make this an actual, like, real card.
Or a
keyword of some.
Yeah, something. As is, it's garbage. I'm going to give it a D.
It's just interesting that that we seem to be getting several over the course of the first year here, several, like, location pressure valve cards that aren't needed. And it just makes me wonder, either, like, is FFG planning something in the future that we're not seeing that they're seeding against? That's just going to go crazy with locations.
So FFG,
or were playtesters?
I can explain. I know exactly what it is.
Doing something wild.
FFG have not in any way realized how powerful attachments are in second edition. So we're, like, I don't know, I'd say 2 chapter packs from a meta that can be overrun by attachments with no real answer. So that's going to be fun. Because FFG hasn't printed any attachment control. However, in first edition, there were location decks that were extremely powerful. So they know that exists. So we keep getting release files for something that in no way exists because they've made locations mostly kind of shitty in second edition.
I absolutely
while they're ignoring attachments.
I absolutely agree because at least the first two cycles probably and the Stark Box were designed in a sort of 2.0 vacuum, right? They didn't really know how 2.0 was going to play out as a practical experience. So their sort of the design philosophy that Nate and then Danny were influenced was the end of first edition, right? And two of the most powerful in the year and a half or so that I played first edition, two of the most powerful decks was the Gen Con winning Dragon Pit and the deck that Aaron did with the regional season and Tommy won a regional with, which was the Longship Maiden's Bane deck. Both of those were decks that just relied on a location to just own and warp the game and warp the meta. And so I understand why they printed these cards. I just really wish they printed better cards that were looking like escape valves. Like Political Disaster is just not even a very good escape valve for what it does. It's worse than the escape valve that existed in first edition. So I don't know. This card's just terrible. And
rate it.
I would give it an F.
Wow.
There are already better cards in the meta that do this.
I can see a time when you'd play this.
But in today's meta, hard F. Like, it still is a card that can generate some potential a card advantage. I've seen worse, so I think I'm probably giving it a D.
Reigns of Autumn, plot neutral, 4-3-1-6. It is an omen, which means it's, I don't know, somehow about others. Isn't that what omen means? Characters and locations do not provide positive gold modifiers. Cool. I'm glad you don't like Lannister. And for some reason, really want to fuck over Tyrell.
Well, that's the weird thing. Like, it reads like an anti-Lannister card, but, like, this doesn't really, like, equalize, like, that whole economy offset sort of thing, right?
No,
like,
I mean,
is Lannister still getting their Tyrion, but Reigns of Autumn is keeping you from getting...
It's a choke card.
I guess it's a choke card. It's kind of low on gold itself. I don't know.
Its own four gold is its biggest downside. That it has four gold means that, like, if they played a five gold, all you did was give them a different advantage.
And odds are pretty decent that they did, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, even with White Tree, right, it means that you both, you know, I guess it shifts the gold one in your favor, right?
Yeah, now you'd be up 5-4 and you played a plot just to accomplish.
Yeah. And you also spent the three on the White Tree. Like, I don't know that Reigns of Autumn is the most effective way to try to, you know, make that back.
And you better be going second if you want to use that gold.
Yep. Yeah, I definitely think it's weak.
I'm giving it an F. Does anyone else have a rating?
Nope.
I think I'm probably there. At least I could see the meta where Pyromancers gets played. Right now, I don't see that for Reigns.
So, Varys' Riddle?
Varys' Riddle. Plot. Neutral. 5-6-1-7. Riddle Scheme. When revealed, initiate the When Revealed ability on a revealed non-riddle as if you had just revealed it. Wow, that is confusingly worded. Or at least alliteratively worded.
Melee!
It is definitely, like the first edition version of this, it is definitely more of a melee card than a joust one.
Wait, is the art on this really ugly, or is it just...
I think we're looking at a tapestry or something.
Yeah, that's what it's supposed
to be. Oh, it's kind of giving us a storybook sort of thing, because Varys was telling a story.
It's ugly.
I get what they were doing.
There's like one joust deck I could see, maybe possibly running it.
What joust deck?
Maybe Night's Watch Defense for the gold, the initiative, and the settlement reserve.
No. Plots are extraordinarily tight in that deck. They've got like... 5 or 6 plots they play over this.
I was just being a little bullish, Aaron. Just trying to...
No. This garbage joust.
I don't know if I would say hard garbage. Like, it's got very solid stats. It's got traits that, while not great, are not actively negative.
Can we get rid of
something like Kingdom?
Sure. What does it do? Like, what are you hitting that it's helping you with? What are you aiming to hit with
Marched.
This? Yeah, I mean, at that point, if we're narrow march.
I mean, there are several plots that you can hit with this that I think are fine plays for you.
Like, you hit
summons.
Yeah, for that point, would you just rather have your own summons or building?
Very possibly. I'm not saying I'm planning on that, I'm saying if I were to just play this for stats, Sam wanting another 5-gold plot with reserve or whatnot, like the odds, yes, are that it's a totally unpredictable plot ability, but odds are that it's blank to good and very like low odds actively.
I can guarantee what Roy will hit every time he plays this plot.
Trading?
You will hit trading every fucking time.
Yeah, I know I will.
You will never hit another one.
Or you'll hit, what else? Fallen from Favor. These are the kind of things that I would hit.
Yeah.
Valor would also be a really hilarious plot to hit with this. When you're like, they're not going to Valor here. They do Valor, you Valor.
But that Valor on the flip side is also one you might want.
It's true. So. Like, which is one of the reasons why I think this is a melee card, right? Because it gives you a lot of flexibility.
Yes. It's very solid stats for melee. And when you've got the choice between three other players' potential plots, suddenly the randomness of its ability looks so much better.
And then they all played trading.
Yeah. No, if everyone else is playing trading, then you're definitely naval superior. That's how you work that.
I don't know. I think trading into everyone else's, or excuse me, naveling into everyone else's trading while hilarious is a good way to make enemies in me.
Oh, yeah. Like, totally.
That's like
I wasn't advocating like, everyone it is going to throw good idea.
Challenges at you, and you're going to cry.
I mean, they're not going to have any characters you clue.
No, if everyone else or two players.
They all get gold from each other.
Yeah. So, right. Like, it's like a weird. Anyway, I've had this actually happen in a melee game, and it did was make the naval player come in fourth.
All right, so I'm going to give this a D-.
Yeah, it's like a B- card in melee and a D. Yeah. D in chess. So.
Yeah, I was just going to give it a combined rating of a C. In regards to both of those flip sides there. So, there you go.
All right. So, what do we think of the chapter pack as a whole?
Why don't we think of two factions that came out really strong in this chapter pack and two that just sort of fell dead?
Night's Watch, and I guess Lannister's the next strongest?
I thought Greyjoy.
Yeah.
Maybe Greyjoy. Yeah, probably Greyjoy.
Let's see if we got debate going. I would be on, I think Jen, you'll see more overall Lannister in the field, so I'm going to go first is Night's Watch, second is Lannister. You're going to see it, yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, Pike is a better card than Janos, but you're going to run into Janos more often. So the factions that came out shitty would be very clearly Tyrell and... But also was the other one we hated, Tyrell and Braithian, yeah.
That seems about right.
Oh, also, all the neutral cards are kind of terrible.
Yeah. Like, there just wasn't anything in this pack that was, like, a single...
I mean,
Night's Watch.
Shake-up.
Night's Watch. Like, the whole of Night's Watch is a big shake-up. But, like, everything else is just shit that slots into decks.
I think
so. Overall, this was not a great startup.
It's not a great way to come out with cards after the stalest meta the game has had in at least 10 years.
Yeah, I agree because I think one of the things that I think Nate said in either his interview with John and Alex, or maybe when you interviewed him, Will, where he said that what they wanted to do was the first chapter pack really shake up the meta as sort of kicking off the cycle. I would say this chapter pack does not do that.
Yeah, makes you wonder why they put the agendas in the second pack, this one. I mean, sure, they wouldn't have had a lot of support, but like that new agendas are one of the biggest.
But this is not what they used to really do in first edition, right? I'm trying to think.
Yes, frequently. And yes, people would complain about that sometimes, like when you would get, say, the Maester's Path or something, and they would go, oh, well, we've got this, and there's only three chains. How do we use this?
You shut up and wait. And then the game breaks for the next fucking 4 years.
Well, but even think about
that's a different thing. But at least people were able to look at that up front at the start of the cycle and get excited because they could see the shape at least of where things were heading. Like you got that nice spear point of the agenda, and
my concern with that is but like FFG doesn't always support that. Like sometimes FFG will just Nate at the time would just release an agenda and forget to print things that support it.
Hello, white book.
Have you met my friend Defiance?
The what?
Yeah. Did you forget? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't think. Well, Defiance. Yeah.
We're gonna head way down to.
I think more specifically though, the weird thing about not having the season's agenda in the first pack is there's already season's tech in both the first cycle and in the Stark Box.
Is there season's tech in the first cycle? Are you sure?
There's a couple season plots.
There's a couple cards I think that react to seasons in the.
Are there like what?
No, that was in the Stark Box.
It was in the Stark Box. It all blows together. I apologize. But there are
especially when the box comes out.
So there's already stuff that supports it, right? So printing those agendas, there's already summer plots, there's already winter plots. So you can basically build a deck from what's in the second chapter pack that's been spoiled, right? And what we already have. So it's just interesting that it's not reversed in order of release. It's great to have new cards. And
yeah,
the big thing that we didn't talk because we didn't have a new segment, the Lannister box is on the boat.
I don't know what that means.
I think we all now know that those terms are completely made up, and the points don't matter.
So. Yep.
Oh, no. I have one last point
okay.
of this chapter.
My bad.
And that pack is that I scrolled upward, and I realized I do have a reason to like Sir Colin of Greenpools, and that is because I realized the illustrator is David Auden Nash, who is a really cool artist. I like his work, number one. Number two, he's a good buddy of a friend of mine that actually I played first edition with when I first started the game in like forever ago. And I actually crashed in David's room for Gen Con once, which I'm sure will never happen again thanks to Arden Shenanigan. So I just want to throw out some props to him. And once again, he is very forgiving to have let us done that once.
Props and slops.
Hashtag Gen Con.
So yeah. I've got a slop. My slop is to FFG as a whole. The designers, organized play. I mean, just the entire fucking company. Whoever gets things printed.
The Chinese workers who slave away.
No. They don't. They're not the company FFG. They're people that are hired by FFG. Not the same. Like, that's sort of outsourcing. But yeah, I'm going to stop FFG. I'm not going to go into a huge amount of detail. But a stale game, a stale meta, a shitty fact, shitty rules decisions, and, oh yeah,
more drama with world sign-up and origins.
Drama with
and Gen Con.
General organized play nonsense. I can keep going. Literally, there's the last three episodes in a row of Second Sons are just like a giant fuck you FFG. So if you'd like to hear that, please go listen to the last three episodes of Second Sons, including the really depressing middle one, where like, yeah.
We were all very intoxicated and very melancholy.
It got sad. So yeah, slops to you, FFG. Please, like, if you don't want to treat your games as competitive games that people should play competitively, you should really have the respect for your fan base to come out and be like, hey, we want this to be casual.
So I want to prop Will for prioritizing his personal life over the podcast and having what looked like, based on social media, a really fun honeymoon.
It was good. I still need to upload, I don't know, 100 pictures or something like that from my phone as well. But it was a good time. And it was nice to kind of set things on autopilot. And like I said earlier, just take a break from the game for a couple weeks and recharge my batteries in basically every way I can think of.
Wow.
In fact, highlight.
Quite a euphemism.
I know, right? Actually, and I was going to say, and highlight of the entire experience was probably finally having the time for the first time in, I literally can't remember when, to just sit down and just plow through one book in 24 hours.
Oh, man. I thought he was going to say Kristen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's a lot of
things. Just sit down and plow through Kristen. Like, wait, you're not going to go there, right?
Aaron, there's a lot of days in the honeymoon, all right? You know, it's not mutually exclusive things.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez.
Just sit there and plow it. All right. Sorry about that, Will. Sorry about that, Kristen.
Sorry about that.
I was going to say, Kristen's probably the one you should apologize to.
Oh, hey, before we forget, props to our good friend Luke Wortley.
Yeah.
He's team right, but we try not to hold it against him. But he's getting married, so welcome to the club. I think that makes absolutely everyone but Roy.
Yep.
And Patrick, but he hasn't hit puberty, so it doesn't count.
It probably wouldn't be legal.
Depends on the state.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Luke.
Super props.
Yeah, super props. Yeah, so, yeah.
Luke, I love you as much as I hate FFG.
Yeah, props.
That was interesting. I'm not quite sure how to take that, Steve.
Well, I talk to him most days, so it's a very strong endorsement of Luke. But anyway.
Luke actually agrees completely. I wake up to long, angry messages about how Thrones is going from Luke.
Anyway, props to Gen Con. It's just a couple of weeks away now. I'm incredibly excited. I'm feeling the hype. I'm looking forward to seeing friends and meeting.
Why did you say friends like it was a question? Like, I don't know if I like any of these people.
Well, you know, you never know. But anyway, I'm excited to see friends. I'm excited to meet a few people like Luke, who I've ever actually never met in person, and people from England and Europe. It's going to be a really amazing time. So I'm really excited. And if you run into any of us at Gen Con, please come and say hi. Well, the other big thing is the best way to identify us at Gen Con is that we will be wearing white book jerseys. At least Aaron, Luke, Patrick, Tommy, and I will be.
Will,
if he's there, we'll be wearing white book jerseys. So we will be quite identifiable, I think, at the Joust and the Melee.
That might be to your detriment in Melee.
That's true. Although,
like I'm good at Melee.
I already know the people that do the podcast. That's not the problem, right? The Brotherhood guys already don't like me. And John,
are they going?
He's a friend. They're either going to Gen Con or Worlds. I don't know which. The last time I saw them, they hadn't decided yet. Okay. So, Will, you had a slot, a prop, right?
Okay. So, I've actually got a couple props that I'm desperately wanting to throw out this week. And the first one is going to be two cats. And in particular, our new cat.
You got a cat? Welcome to the club.
Woo! Yeah. We adopted one from some friends who were moving and had an adopted kid who wasn't taking things well and whatnot. And let's just say middle-aged cats and stressed out three-year-olds don't play real well.
I can see that.
So. Yeah.
What color?
We have a new cat. What color?
Uh-huh.
Kind of dark grayish brown with darker stripes.
And name?
She already had a name. Her name is Mindy. She formerly had a brother named Dark.
That makes sense. It's not a bad name for a cat.
Yeah.
You should get another cat and name it Project.
Mork is good, but Mindy by itself I think seems a little weird.
Get another cat, name it Project. Problem solved.
Or you can just rename the cat. Like,
no, they know that.
You know, I suggested that, but Kristen.
No, you don't rename something middle aged. That's a dick move, Roy.
But hey, the nice thing is she's already like fat and lazy, so she's not running around tearing stuff up. She just kind of likes to chill on the couch or a chair under a table or something, and life is good.
Cats are the best domesticated animals, so.
Let's not have that argument. But cats are awesome. They don't need to be compared to other things to be awesome.
Is that how awesome works? I don't know.
Yes. Indeed.
That's exactly how awesome works.
Your second prop?
Oh, I'm doing them in order. Okay. I'll go ahead. So my second prop is going to be to a new Netflix show that just came out that I'm not quite done with.
Right, two like episodes the two. Left
at the time that we're talking about this. So I'm assuming that show is Stranger Things, Roy?
Yes, Al and I just watched the first episode and enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, like, didn't it pretty, like, perfectly hit that, like, 80s movie, kind of like Goonies, E.T. sort of feel? I mean, it's a little dark.
It's a little darker. I would definitely say it's in tone. It felt more Stephen King-y to me.
Yes, like it definitely has some 80s Stephen
King. Yeah, then I think it hits the tone exactly right. It's a little scary, a little dramatic, a little funny, a little charming.
Yeah, I really dig it. And the soundtrack has been phenomenal so far. Not only the actual like radio songs that they will accent scenes with, but also the composed soundtrack that has that just pitch perfect 80s feel. a little too techno-y, a little awkward. Definitely wouldn't fit in something today, but man, they've been nailing it. I've enjoyed this. All the performances are solid, so we'll see how I feel two more episodes in. I'm sure I'll be talking about that next week, but so far, so good.
Hey, I want to prop two books. The first is But What If We're Wrong by Chuck Klosterman. It's an examination about like what we think is important now and what we might be right or wrong about, say 200, 300 years in the future, assuming humanity exists. And it covers everything from like music and literature to like physics. And it's a really, really good fast read. Interesting thoughts. My other prop, I'm not done with it, but I'm about halfway through in a day. The Brief and Wondrous Life, Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, which is just unbelievably fantastic. It was voted the best book of the 20th century so far, and it is not hard to see why.
You mean 21st century?
Sure, that one too. Any other props?
Hmm.
Well, then I have a question for you two. Let's see who gets it right.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Where should the Pokemon go?
The Danger Zone.
Oh, my. That definitely closes the next chapter of the White Book.
Thank you for getting that right.
Of course.
The cat attacked my way and got hit with a pizza box. Sorry. Things that happen.